All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, November 9th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everybody. It is 40 degrees and sunny here in upstate New York. And when I got up this morning, there was frost on the lawn. So it's not going to be too much longer now. So where did we leave off on Friday? We had a pretty interesting week of discussion. We looked at some of the collusion going on and the revolving door between DARPA, Google, and the White House, and the connections that we have to big data, the Internet of Things, the Brain Project, and good old Kurzweil, of course. One of the other things we looked at, too, toward the end of the week was this little girl now that they are saying they saved from leukemia as the first human who they've gene edited live to remove the leukemia. They're waiting now. They said it's going to be a year or so before they know for sure. But I see a trending in the headlines. Little girl is saved from dying from leukemia by gene editing. We also looked last week at the very first time they ever broadcast live brain surgery on TV, and that was on National Geographic, for putting in a brain implant, of course, to help a poor Parkinson's patient. Now, at the very end of the week, we looked also at the now leaving director of the National Institute of Mental Health and how he is going over to Google. One of his big projects is going to be figuring out how to use smartphones and applications to diagnose mental disorders. And they came out with a study a week or two ago now announcing how things such as schizophrenia, they believe, are on a spectrum, very much like they think autism is, where now there isn't a single diagnosis. It's not solid. You could be very mentally ill or minorly mentally ill, but don't worry about it, because our director of National Institute of Mental Health is going to Google, and they're going to help us solve those problems doing diagnostics via voice, via body movements. We saw now that there's some new behavior monitoring that they're rolling out. There's a few new companies out there that are going to help us with that, with biometrics and behavior, as well as smartphone applications to keep track of, oh, I don't know, schizophrenic patients. Yeah, it's all good. So anyway, Friday's show was titled Kurzweil, DARPA, Brain Project and Behavior Monitoring. And I think that's where we're going to continue today and kind of look at the behavior monitoring and behavior changing that they are working on with propaganda. We saw last week a reference, I don't remember what we were actually talking about at the time, but there was a reference in a story that was talking about genetic modification, and they had said that what's going to have to happen for the 21st century is that they're going to have to win over resistant consumers, because damn, those anti-vaxxers, remember we did that story, I think, last Wednesday about the anti-vaxxer websites and, oh, how they're polluting the minds of new parents who are looking to do research about vaccines. You know, there's a story here this morning that actually calls out Food Babe, and it is a pro-GMO piece about how she has just completely ruined the word GMO. And this is the way, with all this climate change and cow farts, that, you know, we got to get rid of meat to save the planet. We have, oh, I remember what the resistant consumer was in regards to. That was the bug protein, the 3D printed bug protein nutraceuticals that we looked at, you know, to save us in the 21st century and be able to feed these bazillions of people that the planet can no longer sustain. You know, when we then discovered that the federal government is hiring someone to help them spin the propaganda. We talked about the new 21st century Edward Bernays that is going to become a staple to help spin these new programs and new processes that they want to make commonplace for us, our children and our grandchildren, into something that's good. So we don't question, we accept what they give us. And hey, you know what? The regulatory agencies, yeah, they're looking out for our best interest. They're inspecting this stuff upside down and sideways and making sure that there's no effect down the line for the mad science gone mad that's being unleashed without any stoppers left in the bottle. So I don't know, that was kind of long-winded, but I kind of wanted to give a good establishment of where we're going to go today. So here's the newest story I ran across last night titled Biotech's New Plan. Nobody say GMO. And what's interesting is that we looked at a story last week as well, how maybe it was even the week before, how it's now been discovered that a lot of these companies that are making these genetically modified, not only foods, but medications, vaccines, drugs, gene editing techniques, life forms. One of the things that they've been doing is, because there are still some rules until this DARC Act passes through Congress about GMOs, you have to at least give, I don't know, some sort of ingredients. I mean, I don't know. They've been arguing they don't want to label anything. At least we have companies that are putting labels that these are non-GMO, but I guess there are still some sort of rules within the regulatory agencies at this point. But they'll be out a window once the DARC Act, and if not the DARC Act, the TPP pass. And the TPP's already been inked by 12 nations. I still need to read. I guess it's a 350-page document, but I need to block out some time to take a look at the new agreement that has been released. But regardless, what it has been discovered is that these companies now working with genetic modification and these gene drives, the CRISPR-Cas9, this new editing technology where they use another organism such as a bacteria to go in and snip out segments of your DNA or the plant's DNA and make changes, now circumvents any of the safety protocols, if they're, I mean, the sprinkling of what was supposedly dubbed safety protocols, but really wasn't. They've rubber stamped most of this. Remember, we also have revolving doors between Monsanto, the USDA, the FDA, and any other regulatory agencies. I mean, it's all about big pharma. We now have the brand new head of the FDA as a big pharma lobbyist. So, you know, it's all out a window. 21st Century Care Act, you know, don't worry about doing FDA regulations anymore. We could just test it on the sick and the dying and do case studies. So it's completely out of window if there ever was any protection whatsoever. But hey, you know what? Here's our new strategy for you resistant consumers out there. Biotech's new plan. Nobody say GMO. All right, we're going to read this. This is out of Wired from November 5th. Here are some words guaranteed to draw exasperated sighs among synthetic biologists: food babe, Greenpeace, and Friends of the Earth. I mean, do you love the way they start that? Yes, the good old synthetic biologists are exasperatingly sighing when they hear food babe. Again, these pesky people on the internet not telling truths as per dictated by Google and their truth algorithm. While these megaphone-wielding critics of genetically modified organisms are yelling, they say that they really have an agenda. And this is the synthetic biology rep at the Consumer Bio Conference, an invite-only forum for venture capitalists and applied biology companies in San Francisco this week. Food Babe was most certainly not invited. But the anti-GMO message she perfected was the subtext of many conversations. And how interesting. Oh, here we go. Let's see if my screen will scroll here. Everything is frozen. I guess I'm gonna have to sing. All right, let's find, where did that go now? All right, so yeah, Food Babe, of course, was most certainly not invited. The consumer bio, which is companies both big and small, dreamed about the potential of genetically engineered microbes to make foods, perfumes, and new materials like lab spun spider silk. And yeah, they've been working on that for a while. The small companies included startups like the event sponsor, Ginkgo Bioworks, like how they use something that people will look at and go, oh, look, Ginkgo biloba, but it's Ginkgo Bioworks. It must be good. No, it's a GMO company making some sort of GMO who knows what. They're a Boston-based outfit that makes all flavors and fragrances with yeast, probably a genetically modified yeast, I'm certain. But the big players were also there, Colgate, General Mills, and L'Oreal, and most of them agreed that their biggest problem isn't science, it's branding. Yes, spin the message. We need a 21st century Edward Bernays. Everyone there was afraid of the word GMOs, not the idea, but the word. And a big struggle for everyone here is, how do you talk about your product without calling it a genetically modified organism, says Mark Bunger of the market research firm Lux Research. So, like, they got market research. I'm telling you, this is really going to be evil, what they're about ready to do here, to bring the uneducated masses on board and have them turn around and point at us like from, what was that movie with Donald Sutherland at the end, standing on the docks and Amazing Grace is playing Invasion of the Body Snatchers. They're about ready to body snatch the majority of the populace here and sell them this new 21st century world that they're manufacturing. Anyway, back to the story. In a world where, quote, is Monsanto, unquote, autocompletes to evil and Satan. And yes, try that in Google. Type is Monsanto into the search bar. You want to stay far, far away from the word GMO. But how do you tout the benefits of a technology when the well is already so poisoned? I mean, listen to this. One idea is you forget about the technology and you talk up your products instead. Unlike ag companies like Monsanto, most of these companies aren't selling the actual genetically modified organism, but rather they're selling its product. Bolt Threads, for example, wants to make premium clothing from spider silk made by modified yeasts. It's all about romance. It's not about the labs, says Sue Levin, Bolt's chief marketing officer. After she started the job last year, the company picked a new name. It used to be called Refactored Materials, and now they have a sleek new logo as well. And Bolt will launch its first product next year. And Levin does not plan to talk up yeast or growth medium. She says, I want to be the first thing that people talk about when they talk about Bolt Threads and say, oh my God, I want that. Take the example of Tesla, which makes electric cars that are importantly flipping fantastic to drive. But another tact is radical transparency, and especially for more science-forward companies that want to allay fears of consumers interested in the nitty-gritty of genetic modification. Ginkgo Bioworks, which modifies yeast to make flavors like vanillin, which I guess is better than beaver anal gland secretions to make vanillin, or scents like rose oil, is taking that road. They said, if you don't talk about the process, people will actually be skeptical, says Jason Kelly, a co-founder of the company. So Ginkgo has welcomed reporters, including Wired's reporters, to its Boston office, where a big glass window looks into the gleaming white lab space. Ginkgo also has an impressive scientific pedigree. Its founders include Tom Knight, a former MIT professor who was known as the, get this, father of synthetic biology. Ding, ding. So the company has a stake in promoting the field. About a year and a half ago, we decided we had to take the initiative. And the sponsors of this event, like Consumer Bio, there you go, are a part of it. No matter how much you do or do not talk about the process, it is imperative that we avoid the letters GMO. Revolution Bioengineering, which is genetically engineering a color-changing petunia, is calling the technology applied biology. Ginkgo Bioworks talks about quote-unquote designing organisms to make quote-unquote cultured ingredients. Nobody's hiding the actual process of their technology, they say, but take away the emotionally charged letters of GMO because, yes, of those pesky activists on the internet. And when you take away those emotionally charged letters of GMO, Monsanto's dark shadow no longer looms. Remember, too, back a few months ago, we looked at a story that had discussed Monsanto and Syngenta potentially working together. I don't know if there was some sort of financial agreement or there was a deal on the table, but in one of the documents, they had discussed, too, that if they had some sort of merger or financial agreement between the two of them, they were looking at changing their name. And, of course, how convenient because of what a dirty word Monsanto has become, and rightly so. I mean, it's not just about GMO foods. Go to even just Wikipedia, and I know people out there don't trust Wikipedia, but even if you don't trust it, just go to Wikipedia and take a look at Monsanto's history. They were a chemical company. They made exfoliant that then was used in Vietnam. They have cancer-causing materials in the environment from many years ago, and now they're making seed that your children are eating. Anyway, back to the story. Almost done. Rebranding GMO. So this is kind of their big new thing. Let's spin it and rebrand it and make it seem like a wonderful thing. Might just need to start with these smaller startups and the established companies. That means, yes, infiltrate everything with genetic modification. So it becomes ubiquitous. And as ubiquitous as the Internet of Things, it is a takeover of everything. What's happening right now? The 21st century is about replacing what was with a new vision of what should be. And this, I don't know about you, but this isn't my vision. We looked 2 weeks ago, I believe, at all of the tech millionaires, billionaires that are involved on the back end for a lot of the revolution that is happening right now, all the way from, you know, ultimately the longevity project to live forever, precision medicine, the hacking, tracking, bagging, and tagging of every cell, every gene, every word typed, spoken, every thought. They're working on that too. And then to be able to use algorithms to categorize and pull analytics from the data to then, who knows, you know, to be able to make decisions, and eventually it won't even be human decisions any longer. It'll be artificial intelligence decisions, all based upon the algorithm. Anyway, so let's get rid of the bad thoughts about GMOs. The established companies there at the meeting were more tempered in their enthusiasm. Says, I don't think that you can do it in an established brand, says John Buckley of Kerry, an international food ingredient and flavor company. They are happy to let startups take all the risk rather than risk the value of their established brand. And that makes sense for another reason, too. When you hear about big multinational corporations engineering microbes, that sounds like a plot for a dystopian video game. Oh, yes, doesn't it? How interesting, good old DARPA Dan, speaking of video games, is involved with creating the dystopian video game that we now call reality. Monsanto couldn't feed starving children without people casting aspirations Again, damn those internet activists. But a shiny Silicon Valley startup engineering microbes to change the world? That suddenly sounds exciting and maybe even disruptive. And you know, that's the key word, disruptive. We talked about that last week, disruptive technologies. That's something in executive management you talk about when there is a game changer that's about to happen that will change the entire landscape of everything you've known. All your investments need to change. You need to look at your workforce again when there's a disruptive technology. Let's say when the computers first came out. And all of a sudden now we didn't need all these accountants doing everything by hand. You know, we had these tax programs that we could plug numbers into. Oh, you know, H&R Block didn't need 10,000 accountants anymore. Now they maybe could get away with, you know, 3,000 and their computer software. Well, disruptive technologies are happening now on an exponential scale. Ray Kurzweil's talked about that. We looked at his vision for the future on Friday, and he had talked about all kinds of things that are coming down the pipeline. And every single one of these technologies that are coming are disruptive, and I mean mega disruptive, to the way we do things now. You know, this precision healthcare, I mean, we've talked about all of it. I mean, go through all the different archives of what we've done. There's 193 shows now, I think, since January, just dedicated to these topics. So anyway, I ran across another story this weekend called Perfect Genetic Knowledge. And if I would stop having now flash crashes every time I tried to scroll a story, for everything that's put together here. How interesting is this? All right. Genomics is about to transform the world. Human genomics is just the start, and the Earth has 50 billion tons of DNA. But what happens when we have the entire biocode? Good question. We saw a story a few months ago talking about terraforming Mars, and I ran across some more stuff in this story about that Mars transformation. I think they actually mentioned it in here. But the DARPA lady in that original story about terraforming Mars, she had mentioned that in the future, their hope, DARPA's hope, was to have a database of every gene so they can pick and pick traits and mix and match and create life forms with the push of a button. Now, if that's not disturbing to you, I don't know what is. But she had said, and this is even more disturbing, that before we try it on Mars, since we only got one shot at it, we're going to experiment with some of the most contaminated places on Earth and try to clean that up first. And in chat the other day, something came up about a product called Cynthia and the BP Gulf oil spill. And I had heard about that a few years ago with Dr. Rebecca Carley. She had done an interview with Madison Rupert shortly thereafter. I think the Gulf spill was in 2010. I think this interview was like 2011. Dr. Carley was a former surgeon, well-connected, investigating vaccine damage and a lot of the mad science and vaccines. She definitely is in the know. And she had talked about DARPA working on creating these artificial organisms and some of the things that were going on with the Gulf. Well, check this out, because the story, I believe, mentions some of that very thing. So anyway, back to the subtext of the story. It was called Genomics is About to Transform the World. Human genomics is just the start. The Earth has 50 billion tons of DNA. What happens when we have the entire biocode? It says, in case you weren't paying attention, a lot has been happening in the science of genomics over the past few years. It is, for example, now possible to read one human genome and correct all known errors. Yes, because we are so imperfect. Perhaps this sounds terrifying, but genomic science has a track record in making science fiction a reality. Everything that's alive, we want to rewrite, boasts Austin Hines, the CEO of Cambrian Genomics last year. Yeah. Can I just say that that literally just made my stomach turn over? He says, quote, "Everything that's alive, we want to rewrite." I remember we listened to an interview with Ray Kurzweil back a few months ago, and they had been asking him about this transhumanist future and moving everything from biological to synthetic. And he had made some offhanded comment that that process was already well underway. And in our research that we dug into looking at some of the genetic modification that's been going on in our history and some of the food that's already made it to market that was never labeled back 20 to 25 years ago, the GMO tomato, that flavor saver. We have the genetically modified apples and potatoes out there now. They had talked about the GMO vaccines that they were putting into food. They started with bananas. Then they went into tomatoes, rice, lettuce, apples, potatoes. How convenient. We already have apples and potatoes on the market. You know, no browning. But who knows what the hell else is in there? Knowing that all that's been out there and that no one ever knew, knowing about the cloned meat that was approved long ago that didn't need labels. Now we don't even have country of origin labeling because it was voted as being against the international laws by saying where our food came from. The TPP is going to get rid of all that if there's any labeling left at all. Of course, that DARK Act that's still sitting there, that'll get rid of it. So, I mean, guys, and now with climate change, with the UN coming out saying red meat is dangerous, processed food is dangerous, cows cause too much methane, and it's causing out-of-control global warming. There's not enough water anyway for cows. We have all these animal diseases. And wait until we look. There's some new genetically modified animals coming to a dinner plate near you. Hopefully we get there today. So let's get back to the story. So this Austin Hines of Cambrian Genomics, and we need to look into them, said everything that's alive, we want to rewrite. It was only in 2010, interesting year, 2010, BP oil spill, that Craig Venter's team, Craig Venter, the entrepreneurial billionaire of eBay and PayPal, I believe, his team in Maryland, and he's in Maryland right where we have a lot of these military and surveillance installations. Craig Venter's team in Maryland led us into an era of synthetic genomics when they created Cynthia. Yes, I said it. Cynthia. The first living organism to have a computer for a mother. And yes, they did this genetically modified creature that then reproduced itself. A simple bacterium. Cynthia has a genome just over a 500,000 letters of DNA long. But the potential for scaling up is vast. Synthetic yeast and worm projects are already underway. And 2 years after the birth of Cynthia, sequencing was so powerful that it was used to extract the genome of a newly discovered 80,000-year-old human species called the Denisovians from a pinky bone found in a frozen cave in Siberia. It's very interesting they mention them as well because I was just reading about the Denisovians two or three nights ago. They actually believe that it's a whole nother branch of humanity where the whole Asian peninsula came from, where we were related to the Neanderthals. Back to the story. In 2015, the United Kingdom became the first country to legalize the creation of three-parent babies. We've talked about that. That is, babies with a biological mother and father, but a second woman who donates a healthy mitochondrial genome, the energy producer found in all human cells. Commensurate with their power to change biology as we know it, the new technologies are driving renewed ethical debates. Yes, we've looked at some of those, like what, how much modification is required before people are no longer considered human species? Or do we give AI, I mean, let's take a step further. They're working on all these brain projects and growing brains in a petri dish. And there was a story that I never got to last week about a brain that they've been growing in Russia, and now they're teaching it to think. I mean, do these things have rights? It's a very good question. So anyway, it's driving renewed ethical debates and uneasiness is being expressed not only among the general public, but also in high-profile articles and interviews by scientists. When China announced that it was modifying human embryos this April, the term CRISPR-Cas9 trended on social media sites such as Twitter. And we've looked at CRISPR-Cas9 in detail as well. CRISPR-Cas9, by the way, is a protein RNA combo that defends bacteria against marauding viruses. And properly adapted, it allows scientists to edit strings of DNA inside of living cells with astonishing precision. And it has, for example, been already used to show that HIV can be snipped out of a human genome, and that female mosquitoes can be turned male to help stop the spread of malaria. You know, we looked at some of the CRISPR-Cas9 gene drives that they had created for the mosquitoes. That was that UK company. And off the top of my head, oh, we talked about bio something. Wow, my flash is completely frozen again. I don't remember their name. But they were creating the genetically modified mosquitoes. And in one generation of unleashing this genetic change within mosquitoes, it would wipe out the entire species. You know, it's not going to take much for them to do something like that in the human population if they really wanted to. All right, I'm completely frozen here now. And this is not good. So let's see if I can find this story on my other machine. Genomics is about to. Yeah, we'll find it. Oh, it really puts a damper on things. Here we go. This is from October 30th. Don't worry, it's Monday. Oh, this isn't the same story. This is about the cutting and pasting. Actually, this was another story I had queued up. Here we go. I hate Mondays. Have I told you that lately? Mondays are always so rough. All right. So where do we... we were in the CRISPR-Cas9 area here. All right. So anyway, we looked at the debate as to how easy it is to genetically modify mosquitoes and wipe out an entire species and how great that is, especially to cure things such as malaria. We know there's a lot of money in the cure of malaria behind it with Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. But also remember mosquitoes. And we, you know, we talked about this a long time ago. Mosquitoes were already engineered by funding with Bill and Melinda Gates to get rid of an equine virus that was killing horses in Australia. And they had genetically modified these mosquitoes to get rid of the mosquitoes that were producing that disease. And it wouldn't be too much of a stretch for them to modify insects to be vectors of vaccines, let's say. You know, they are already disease vectors. Looking at Plum Island and a lot of the research that was done in Plum Island, even where Dr. Huber was involved with the plant material. They had this whole program with bugs. We looked at bugs as disease vectors and as bio warfare agents. Fleas, mosquitoes, ticks, and things of that nature. Anyway, one of CRISPR's co-developers, Jennifer Doudna, of the University of California in Berkeley, has strongly discouraged any attempts to edit the human genome pending a review of ethical issues. Well, guess what? They already did it. That little girl that was dying of leukemia had a human genome edited as the very first one. So screw it, man. Let's pull the cork out of this one, too. Now it is going to be a heyday for genetic modification for live people, anyone who is desperate and dying. Well, thanks to China, I guess that ship sailed already. Indeed, now the technology appears to be finding its way into the hands of hobbyists. Nature recently reported that members of the biohacker subculture have been messing around with CRISPR, and this was a big concern that they had in the very beginning, though the enthusiast they interviewed did not appear to have a clear idea of what he wanted to do with it. So I guess there's a culture out there called biohackers that already have their hands on CRISPR. How great is that? Given that our genetic abilities appear to be reaching a critical threshold, it is worth taking a fairly hard-headed look at what the next few years will promise. For instance, could DNA solve some of our pressing energy issues? Well, very interestingly, yes, the energy issues must be where the feds decided they were going to plop synthetic biology, as we discovered the U.S. Department of Energy synthetic biology report to Congress dated July of 2013. You know, when they mentioned Cynthia, and then we talked about the Gulf. And then we find out that the Synthetic Biology Division is involved with the Department of Energy. It really has me wondering about some things. So could DNA solve some of our pressing energy issues? One project hopes to engineer trees that can glow in the dark. Why would you want that? And you can sign up to pre-order the new glow-in-the-dark trees now. And at least one weed version of it that can glow in the dark, and trees that take too long to mature will be good prototypes. Perhaps the day is not far off when our streets are lined with bioluminescent foliage, and this would presumably drive electric street lamps into obsolescence. Like so many other energy-hungry, quote-unquote, old-fashioned technologies. Yes, old-fashioned. So, 20th century. Get over it. Let's just become 21st century lunatics. But this is hardly the only potentially revolutionary project that aims to play out over the next 5 to 10 years. Ventnor, again, a billionaire capitalist who made money on the tech industry, is working on re-engineering pig lungs so that they can be used in human transplants. And we read all about that. They were actually, even went beyond pig lungs, they were actually genetically modifying pigs, putting in human genes so that they would produce organs, all kinds of organs, that could very easily be transplanted from pigs into humans. And back to the story, this could have a much larger impact than is immediately obvious. About 1 in 10 deaths in Europe is caused by lung disease. And farther afield, Ventnor is in a race to find life in Mars. Yes, Ventnor's also working on Mars with DNA sequencers, and he's developing a method, and listen to this, of biological teleportation. The idea is if you sequence microbial DNA on Mars, you could then reconstruct the genomes on Earth using 3D printing. And remember, Ventnor's using all these synthetic bacteria. So he's going to rebuild organisms that he potentially finds on Mars in a synthetic format in a lab on Earth with a 3D printer. And not only is it just Ventnor, but good old Elon Musk is working with him, I guess. The process could work the other way around, too. Vetner and Elon Musk are talking of using this technology to what? Oh, terraform Mars with 3D printed earthly microbes. So they've pulled Elon Musk into the fold with DARPA, who's also talking about terraforming Mars with synthetic biology, and Vetner, who created the first self-replicating synthetic biology in his lab in Maryland. The whole thing just boggles the imagination. Yeah, I guess if that's what you'd call it. But Vetner and Musk do have form for pulling off amazing feats. Nevertheless, perhaps we should start our tour of the horizon closer to home. By 2020, many hospitals will have genomic medicine departments. Yeah, we've talked about this in depth. Designing medical therapies based on your personal genetic constitution, precision medicine. Gene sequencers, machines that can take blood samples and reel off your entire genetic blueprint, will shrink below the size of USB drives. And supermarkets will have shelves of home DNA tests, perhaps nestled between cosmetics and medicines, for everything from whether your baby will be good at sports, to a breed of cat you just adopted, to whether your kitchen counter harbors good bacteria. We will all know someone who's had their genome probed for medical reasons, perhaps even ourselves. And personal DNA stories, including the quality of the bugs in your gut, and we've talked about that as well, will be the stuff of cocktail party chit-chat. And listen to this. By 2025, projections suggest that we will have sequenced the genomes of over a billion individuals right now with the National Institute of Health and the help of 23andMe and Obama and his federal edict. They are working on a million sequenced genomes for some of their mad science research and creating new biopharma solutions. Anyway, back to this, by 2025, they'll have over a billion individuals sequenced. And this is largely due to the explosive growth of what? Oh, the field of cancer genomics. Yes, we have a cure for cancer. Step right up and we'll tell you how to cure it, or we'll tell you if you're at risk. Now, wait till you hear this. We called this one in the day also. I didn't know about Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs, the co-founder of Apple, became one of the early adopters of genomic medicine when he had the cancer that killed him sequenced. It was the first I had read that. But this next one says many others will follow, and we will become more and more willing to act on what our genes tell us. And just as the very first public figure stood up and said, hey, I'm going to have my boobs cut off because I have this BRCA gene, when no one understood what it was. And I still think that this was more of a psyop than anything else. Angelina Jolie chose to undergo a double mastectomy to stem her chances of developing future breast cancer. Society will think nothing of making decisions based on a wide variety of genes and gene combinations. And already a study has quantified the quote-unquote Angelina Jolie effect. Of course it did. Guys, this is all, again, to fight against resistant consumers. Angelina Jolie was in movies. She was on TV. She was in your video game. Oh, she's a UN ambassador. What a better person to hold up as an example. Look, she's a beautiful woman. There were many young men and boys who worshipped her, but she made it okay to undergo a double mastectomy because your DNA told you that you have a potential to get ill in your future. I mean, I don't know. Maybe she really had it done. But I'm going to tell you, when that happened, that just threw up red flags for me. Because who in their right mind, as a woman myself speaking, I might step up instead of yearly exams, go for every 6 month exams. But I don't know if I would go to getting rid of my womanhood, especially being a mom, to say that I'm going to guarantee my future health. How is that going to be? What if there were hormones that were required? What if that cancer, because we don't understand genomics, we're just dipping our toe in. What if that cancer now will develop into something more virulent somewhere else? Because you've removed the breasts. At least with the breasts could be removed if they became cancerous. So I don't know. I call bullshit on that whole Angelina Jolie story. But hey, regardless of whether or not it was true, their scientists have quantified that there was a quote-unquote Angelina Jolie effect. It made the general populace one step closer to accepting genomics and modification. So, all right, back to the story. Following her public announcement, the number of women turning to DNA testing to assess their risk for familial breast cancer actually doubled. So there you go. For better or for worse, we will increasingly define ourselves by our DNA. And there are hints of this already in the issues of privacy surrounding disease genes, such as the APOE gene, which I don't know what that is, the APOE gene, the largest known genetic determinant of Alzheimer's disease. And in 2007, James Watson, one of the discoverers of the structure of DNA, became the second person ever to have his genome sequenced. He refused to learn whether or not he had the APO gene, terrified he would meet the same fate of his mother, who died of dementia. And I mean, this whole then, Alzheimer's, chronic wasting disease, mad cow disease, Parkinson's disease, any of these brain wasting diseases, any of these mental, quote unquote, mental illness diseases that now, of course, occur on a spectrum. Google Life Sciences moving now into diagnosing mental diseases and bringing on the director of the National Institute of Mental Health, who's going to make one of his big projects diagnosing disease with smartphone applications and then finding ways with medications or maybe even genetic modifications. How about DARPA with all their brain research, flashes of light or electrical stimulation or stimulation with sound that can flip switches in the brain, make you happy, make you not depressed, make you forget bad memories? All the tests on the PTSD patients, putting in brain implants to cure things such as Parkinson's. This has got to be really disturbing to every single one of us. So now let's do a genetic test and see that you have a gene that tells you that you have a penchant for Alzheimer's. Well, we could do preventative medicine now, because you will be a taxation on our Obamacare, our slice and dice medical health care record system that's being rolled out under Obamacare. You'll be a taxation on the system if you don't have it fixed. Anyway, at the other end of the spectrum, John Wilbanks, a proponent of genomic openness, freely admitted that his profile carried a risk of Alzheimer's. Society will have to develop new norms with how to cope with such dilemmas. Whether they be stick closer to a path of Watson's or Wilson's remain to be seen. So whether being open about your genomic data or not, whether you care you have a pension or not, and I'm going to say that it's going to lead more toward Wilbanks, where everyone's going to want to know and they're going to want to get a cure, of course, for a fee. Perhaps the most profound long-term societal change will be DNA's contribution toward what the American futurologist and entrepreneur Peter Diamandis, and I've run into him before, calls perfect knowledge. Diamandis seemed to be thinking mainly about omnipresent cameras. Where a trillion sensors, and this is this Internet of Things everywhere, where with a trillion sensors gathering data everywhere, autonomous cars, satellite system, drones, wearables, cameras, you'll be able to know anything you want, anywhere, anytime and query that data for answers and insights. And they're also going to know everything about you at a genetic level. I mean, guys, this is the absolute utter takeover of everything. You know, and eventually, when they have all of our genome sequenced and they understand what each of these genes do, we've already seen some references to inferior genomics, you know, because of some of the things that you did in the past, the stress you had, the foods you ate, it changed your genes and it's passed down to future generations. I mean, you can see where this is leading. You will not be able to reproduce if you have faulty genes. Your bloodline will be allowed to die. The telltale signs of a possible future are widespread. DNA testing is already the gold standard of criminal evidence. And yes, don't forget about that. We'll be able to be implicated in anything with these biosensors that they're going to build into electronic devices and clothing and cameras and smart dust and everything else that they're working on. Biometrics. It only takes a hair, a fingerprint, or a glass that has been drunk from to get enough DNA to identify a suspect. And there are millions of DNA profiles in the FBI's CODIS database to already match against. Some gated communities in the United States also require DNA from pets. Yeah, we read about that. So they can identify whose dog it is that took a dump on somebody's lawn. It says owners who let their pets defile shared grounds are fined. And the authorities only have to match what they failed to scoop up against their entry in the mandatory pet registry. And in Hong Kong, the same goes for those who litter. Unlawfully drop trash you've touched, licked, or chewed like gum or a tissue, and you might find a facsimile of your face on a bus stop. And there was a woman, I think she was in New York City, who was actually using some sort of DNA sequencer to pick up things such as gum and cigarette butts around the ground in the subways and stuff, and then recreate an image of the person's face who dropped it. And that was in New York. I guess they're doing the same very thing in Hong Kong. The latest advances in DNA identification permit lifelike 3D reconstruction. So how awesome is that? I mean, and not awesome. Awesome in a very scary way. They can literally recreate your face in 3D. From anything you've left your DNA on. What next? Presumably, a consolidated genomic registry isn't far off. It already exists to a limited extent, populated on a voluntary basis by early adopters. And there are several million, so now we're up to several million, human genome projects. The consumer genetics company 23andMe, ding, ding, in California can boast more than a million customers. And I wonder, they don't mention the relationship of the CEO being Sergey Brin's wife, co-founder of Google. National genomics programmers are taking shape all across the globe, led by countries such as who? Oh, yes, Iceland. Yes, Iceland that everyone points to and says, look, they threw out the bankers. Iceland's in the lead for genomics, which is now sequenced or inferred the genetic content of over a third of its population already on a voluntary basis. Kuwait, on the other hand, and we read about this one as well, Brandon Turville did a story, recently introduced mandatory DNA testing of its entire population, and that included even people visiting as an anti-terrorism measure. And the social and political consequences of such an archive, frankly, defy my futurological abilities. This person writing the story. A certain amount of alarm does not seem misplaced. If for any technology lends itself to the state or private abuse, it is this one. And my interests are basically scientific. While a registry of the genome of every human on the planet would be one of the most tremendous scientific assets ever created, it will still only scratch the surface of what genomics might achieve. We are beginning to think of the DNA on Earth as a whole. All life, all humans ultimately exist in one system on our pale blue dot, and let's give it a name. Let's call the sum of DNA on Earth, quote-unquote, the biocode. And this story was the first time I ever heard that reference, but pay attention because I think they're going to be referencing this more. Scientists have just estimated this biocode size. And combining the information about genome size with the information about the biomass of different organisms suggests that the biocode exceeds plus or minus 3.6 times 10 to the 31st power million base pairs. And multiplying the genome sizes of organisms ranging from bacteria to bees to birds by the number of organisms in all groups of life on Earth yields a very rough estimate of about 50 billion tons of DNA. This is enough of the invisible code of life to fill 1 billion shipping containers. But how much do we know about it? Shockingly little. We remain overwhelmed by its biodiversity, especially when it comes to the invisible majority, and that is the microbes. And not only are we appreciating that our gut is filled with trillions of microbial cells, but so is the planet. Single-celled microbial life comprises 50% of the planet's biomass and 99% of its genetic diversity. It is ancient, drives our biogeochemical cycles, helps sustain the planet's life, and is largely unknown. But ha ha ha, that will change. Yes, it will. One of the greatest achievements of the coming century will be the characterization of the biocode, not just as a list of genomes for different species, but as patterns of interacting communities. And our first guess at its size opens a door, and we will now start to understand how it has fluctuated in composition in the past and how it will change in the future. So I think we're going to leave it at that for today and continue on with this tomorrow. Make sure you stick around. It's Monday. Ms. Lonnie Clark is up next, and lots of good programming tonight. Everyone have an awesome Monday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Take care.